for joining us tonight, and welcome to The Wine Muse. The Wine Muse is live every third Thursday of the month here on BTR. I'm your host, Linda Rez, and I'm here with my co-host, William Pollard, from Wild for Washington Wine. And we would like to invite you to join us by calling in tonight and telling us where you're at and what you're drinking.
Linda, how are you today?
Well, I'm doing good, William. How are you doing?
Fantastic. I've been looking forward to our show tonight, talking about my favorite wine with our wine industry friends.
I'm excited. I always get excited, especially about a live show, because it's happening right here and now, and we have our wine open. So, yeah, my heart's beating. I'm ready to go.
Me too.
Get a little wine, settle myself down.
Yeah, my bottle's open. I'm ready to go. But, you know, before we introduce our first guest, I wanted to let our listeners know about one of my favorite Washington wine events. It's coming up at the end of March. It's called Taste Washington, and it's the nation's largest single-region wine input event, March 26th through 29th. And I hope to be there. And it's one of the reasons I love this event is that there are over 200 Washington wineries pouring, and along with that, there are over 70 Pacific Northwest, Seattle restaurants that will have food pairings to go with those wonderful wines. And I'd like people to check it out if they've never been to Washington, if they've never had the exposure to literally hundreds of wines that you can taste on a weekend. This is something to check out. You need to go to tastewashington.org.
Okay, that's coming right around the corner. Now, we also do need to maybe introduce a little bit about what we're going to be talking about tonight, what's going to be going on in the show.
Well, we've invited four guests. These are wine industry individuals who I've met at a number of wine events. They're friends, and they have a real interesting, diverse background. And I've asked them to talk about their favorite wine. And
very
I kind of
cool.
Left it kind of broad and open, so let's see what they have to share with us tonight.
Okay, and then we brought our favorites as well. So we're going to have six favorite wines tonight.
That's right. Naturally, I brought a Washington Syrah tonight.
Of course, yeah, and I brought a Washington Reserve Red, so it's like a Bordeaux-style wine.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah. All right, well, let's go ahead and get our first guest on, and then we'll come right back in.
Okay.
An album that's just been released, and I'm going to be talking to them and doing an album preview next week, so listen in for that. William, are you still there?
I'm right here.
Yeah.
I was listening to the music.
Okay, and while we were away, we picked up Tina.
Yes.
Hi.
Tina's our
hey,
first
Tina.
Guest tonight, and it's Tina Morey. She is a certified sommelier. She's working towards her Master's of Wine. And she's a partner with Protocol Wine Studio and La Metro Wine. Welcome, Tina, to the show tonight.
Thank you so much. How are the two of you tonight?
Awesome.
Cool. Yeah,
I haven't had any wine yet.
You haven't had any wine? What? Wine?
I've already started.
Yeah, so have I. Jeez. Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to try to catch up really quick. But you know how I do. I don't, yeah. I kind of lose myself. It is the happy juice for me, so I have to drink it really slow so I don't get too happy too fast.
Yes, okay. I understand that.
Well, Tina, tonight we wanted to talk about your favorite wine, which is kind of a broad question. But I wanted you to let our listeners know about what Protocol Wine Studio and La Metro Wine is.
Yeah, so Protocol Wine Studio, we are based out of San Diego, beautiful San Diego. And we are basically a think tank for the wine community. Think tank usually means, well, for us, it means that we collaborate with other folks who are trying to get into the wine industry but lack the means to do so. So we kind of help people out in that regard. Thus, our collaboration with Aaron Epstein started. Aaron Epstein is our curator for Le Maître Wine. He is the gentleman that chooses all the wines. I just buy them. So, and of course, do everything else. But Aaron is the actual curator of Le Maître Wine.
So you offer educational classes and you also sell wine, correct?
Correct. Yeah, we also do a wine studio. It's an online Twitter program. You, of course, have been online with us, mm-hmm. William, in the past. Yeah, it's a four-week program. We talk about emerging regions, varieties, winemakers, and importers, just trying to get the untold story for the most part. And it's doing really well. People are now coming to me rather than my tracking people down to be on the show.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, we're doing great. Yeah.
Nice.
I'm learning quite a bit, I must say. I am learning a lot myself. So,
with your tremendous wine background and your educated wine palate, how do you pick a favorite wine, and what is it?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, I used to not particularly like that question, what's your favorite wine, because, like you said, it is such a broad-based question. But it's really not for me. It's for the people who are asking the question, right, just to kind of put things into perspective as to where I'm coming from. And I think wine, your favorite wine and why you like wine, it's almost like reading a book. Like you read a book when you're 14 and you think it and hear it and see it in that context as a 14-year-old. And then when you read that same book as a 25-year-old or a 35-year-old person, it's completely different. And that's how I view wine. Oh. So wines tell a story. Wine is also akin to a long relationship. I've been married... Gosh, I want to be married. I need to look at my ring. 20 some odd years. So, you know, wine is like a marriage too. It's different every time you taste it, depending upon your mood and what you're eating. So, mm-hmm. but right now, I opened up an Italian. It's Roberto Zeni. It's a Pinot Grigio. Oddly enough, you know, Pinot Grigio has kind of fallen out of style, but this wine is actually orange in color. Aromato means orange or copper. And it's absolutely stunning. It's a stunning, stunning wine. And you can drink this in the winter. Obviously, it's 19 degrees in Virginia Beach at the moment where I am. Or in the summer, it doesn't really matter. It's just fun.
So you run the business out of San Diego, but you're in Virginia right now.
Yeah, I was going to say the same thing. Wow.
Yeah, I travel a lot, but I do most of the social media. So, you know, obviously I can be anywhere, but right. Yeah, I get there a lot. Our next big event is in June for the summer solstice. We're going to be highlighting our rosé collection. So it's just going to be a huge event. So come out to San Diego.
So, I love San Diego. So when you're focusing on wines, the education of the sales, is it international, domestic, or a mix of everything?
Everything and anything. Doesn't really matter.
Oh.
No.
Well, Tina, you're also working on your Master of Wine. So what all are you doing to get that? What's it going to take?
while working, you mean creeping towards, right? Just kind of crawling towards it. Yeah, I like to say my business is getting in the way of my studies. But it's true. You know, you run a business and I'm on two coasts. So I'm up at 6 and then I don't finish until, you know, 11 or midnight, and then try and fit studies in there. But oddly enough, that's where Wine Studio comes in. Like I said, I learned such a great deal on that program. You know, it's funny, everybody thinks it's for them, but frankly, the hell, it's for me. I just love it. It's just great learning experience and just speaking to new and exciting winemakers. But yes, I do really need to get back into the swing of things towards my Master of Wine. But I think I'll probably be gray by the time I earn that title. But hey, that's still a goal, right? So.
Right.
Now, is your go-to wine, since you're from San Diego, do you see that you go to white more often than red?
Yes, you know, I tend to go to white wines more often than red, and I'm not quite sure why that is.
Well, this sounds like people from warmer climates tend to go white more than red, and people from colder. See, we're way up here in what usually is the coldest places in the country right now.
Not now.
We're like, I don't know what's going on. It's so warm up here. But we are always coffee, you know, really rich, dark, thick coffee and red wine.
Yeah, yeah. Well, red wine does well in the Washington area, right?
That's true. We grow.
Well, actually, Riesling does pretty well, and Pinot Blanc. What other whites are doing well? You know, weather patterns are changing too. Mm-hmm. Climate change, that's changing the face of a lot of regions, a lot of vineyards. Sure.
For tonight, I selected a Walla Walla Syrah by Amaury Sellers, but I almost selected actually a Riesling because I'm kind of come back to Riesling the last year.
Yeah, I can see that. Yeah, it's funny. Riesling has I think you either love it or hate it, but mostly I think if people just don't, still, they don't understand it. And for those of us in the industry, I don't know why that is, but we just can't put our fingers on it.
Right.
But actually, I was going to choose something else too. There's a Vermont winery called La Garagista, and the winemaker's name is Deirdre Heekin, and we highlighted her Pet Nat in our July Le Metro wine collection, and it's absolutely stunning. Well, I mean, it's stunning, but at the same time, it's just a lot of fun. I actually got plastered on it. It was such a good time. Oh my God. But I think that's how we remember wines. What happened? What was the experience? Oh, I got plastered on that wine. That's why I love that wine.
Sometimes that can be a bad thing, though. Some of those wines I don't remember, as positive. But it's good that you still remember that one as positive.
Yes.
What is there a varietal on the horizon that you see that is just like up and coming? We did a special last year on Grüner Veltliner, and it was one that I wasn't really familiar with before I started. Are there any more like that out there, like the next boutique small varietal that's being introduced to the American population?
I'm a big fan of Brachetto from Italy. There's one particular producer called Matteo Correggia. I was introduced to this bottle years and years ago when I was just first starting out in the industry. And it just reminded me of rose petals and strawberries. And the funny thing about Brachetto, and it could be made into any particular wine out there. It's sweet. It could be sparkling. It could be still red. And obviously that's the one I like, the still red wine. So Brachetto, I think, is going to make a huge comeback. And the white Italian grape Pecorino. Fabulous white variety from the Marche region. It's just a beautiful, undiscovered region. And I think that's probably the big thing, too. It's not just wine regions, but it's tourism, too, because that's what funds all of that. You know, it's this big, round process. It's not just one thing. It's everything that encompasses it. So I think Pecorino is going to be huge. I hope so. That's what I'm going to say, yeah.
Well, you make it sound really good, so I'm going to try it out. I'm taking notes.
It's beautiful. I'll send you the information. Oh, it's gorgeous. Gorgeous grape.
Oh, thank you. Well, Tina, you're going to have to come back on. Since we have four guests tonight, we do have to let you go. Where can they – but I do want you to come back on because we didn't even get to begin to really tap into what I want to ask you. Would you come back on?
Absolutely. Anytime. Anything for William. Anything.
Okay.
And now you.
Thank you.
And where's the best place for listeners to connect with you?
Twitter, Protocol Wine, very easy. Email tina.mori@protocolwine.com. And the website, Protocol Wine Studio, very easy.
Okay, cool. Great.
Thank you,
Tina. All
right, Tina,
cheers. Enjoy the rest of your bottle.
Cheers, guys. Thanks so much. Right. Have a good night.
Thank you.
You too. Night.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, that's one busy woman.
Oh, yeah, she is. I feel sorry for her. She's over on the East Coast right now, though. Eek.
Yeah, we met in Virginia at a wine conference, and I liked her instantly because I was speaking. Well, I stood up and made some comments that the lecturer presenter had, and she agreed with me and backed me up, even though somebody else tried to shoot me down. So I've been a fan of hers ever since.
You owe her then, in other words.
Yeah, in a way. Yeah,
yeah,
definitely. Yeah, I like her a lot. She's a neat lady.
Yeah, she is. So that was interesting about the new up-and-coming grapes. I hadn't heard of those. Had you?
Probably background noise. For me, if I'm not engaged, because I've never had a Pecorino, for instance. So I don't have anything to say. To me, it's a word. It doesn't mean anything other than it's from Italy.
All right, we're going to now get our next guest on. It's going to be James Melendez, James the Wine Guy. And we're loosening up here. We've had I've had one sip of wine. And, man, that's enough to really loosen me up. Watch out. I'm a lightweight. I haven't had much to eat. I've got a plate of cheese out, though, tonight, too. which is a good idea to cleanse your palate. And I've also got some water next to me, so that's good. I'm going to go out while we're getting our next guest with another song from The Turns. This is tonight's kind of a little whet your appetite of their new album. And this one is going to be called When You Get Home.
Counting the ships in and out of the harbor, waiting for sails that I know.
Well, welcome back. Thank you for the music, Linda.
Hey, you're welcome. Keeps coming back on. One doesn't want to go away. There you go.
Well, I'm ready for our next guest, James Melendez, also known as James the Wine Guy. James is another wine friend of mine. He's a writer, a wine blogger, and a wine videographer. And since 2009, James has published over 2,000 wine video reviews on YouTube. I encourage you to check out his YouTube channel. He's also created a taxonomy on Vitis vinifera and other wine grape species. Welcome to the Wine Muse, James. How are you tonight?
Hey,
James.
Hey, how are you guys doing?
Fantastic.
Better Thank all you. The time.
Very nice. I really appreciate the nice introduction, Elaine. Very, very nice.
2,000 well, James- videos on YouTube.
Yeah.
You're that's a busy man.
Either that's a really good thing or it's a really bad thing. Yeah. Too much time on my hand, or, you know, it's really a great love for the art form. I think it's an amazing thing to do. And I'm a huge promoter that, you know, there's such, it's a huge subject matter, right? And I think a lot of people should be doing wine videos, not just myself, because there's so much to be talked about. And I think there's so few people to do it. And the people that do do it give up too quickly. So I'm, you know, if you want to do it, please do it. I really encourage a lot of people to get together, hold hands, and do videos together.
You know, James, ever since I met you, I've been impressed by the volume of wine that you review. I've done a handful of videos, and it's work. It's not a simple little thing to do. It takes a real commitment, and it takes some editing. And I have no idea how you do it, to be honest.
Thank you.
He's not going to give you his secrets either.
Well, you know, funny to say that. I really, you know, I'm going to be publishing later this year how to do a wine video.
Oh.
So,
okay.
Yeah, so I'll let you guys know.
Nice.
Yes,
share the love. Share the love.
Well, James, you know, tonight we've invited you onto the Wine Muse to talk about your favorite wine. And I know it's, you know, there's no simple answer to that question.
Sure.
I'm curious about what you came up with.
You know, what I came up with was something that I think is just really, first of all, I love, you know, I'll call it the little E, the little esoterics, because I think they're just a huge category, right? I mean, there's so many great wines out there. And so what I selected was Tech Vesh's Republic of Macedonia, Arcatitelli 2012 vintage. And for me, I think it's such a remarkable wine. It's a beautiful wine, and it's a very different iteration that you might get from the Republic of Georgia. And different winemaking styles, but yet when I find a wine like this for, I think I found it for $9.97, interesting price point here in San Francisco. You know, first of all, it's a great wine because it's going to pair with so many amazing things like sea bass, scallops, falafel, fish tacos, and so forth. And really a gracious quality wine, a beautiful producer. If you haven't tried these wines by Tech Vesh, I really recommend it. They do a Veronich as well that's fantastic.
That's right. You're from San Francisco, and you've lived down there for like 17 years, right?
Indeed, yes.
And so you're right at the heart of wine country in California.
Yeah. It's really a great, what I call an intersection between San Francisco being a great wine town, first of all, and it's really, you know, we're right in the heart of, you know, Northern California wine country. But interestingly enough, it's also, I think, really an open arm for varieties that are lesser known, wine countries that are lesser known. You know, talking about wines from Croatia, Hungary, even from, I've just been tasting wines from Turkey recently that have made it to the marketplace here off-premise. And I think that's a really great sign. And I think that it's from my promotion of these wine varieties is that, first of all, you know, it's a vicious circle. So if people aren't tasting, they don't know what these wines are like, and therefore they're not going to ask for their wine merchant to bring them in. The wine merchant is not going to bring them in because nobody's asking for them. Mm-hmm. But all along the way, these wine varieties, and I'll name a few that I think are really while they might be lesser known in their respective countries, they're obviously going to be much more well known. But I think they offer so much to say the consumer here in San Francisco or other places around the country and around the world that, you know, once you get to taste them, I think they, you know, leave a lingering impression. They're a point of difference wine. And I think that's a really important part of it. So I've been tasting Petit Rouge, Mentilla, Terran, Plavatsmali, Lagrange, Aliatico, Chesanese. So all these wine varieties are landing on our table. And in San Francisco, I'm just really proud that this population of my fellow citizens here are, you know, of course, they love California wines. There's nothing wrong with that. But they're picking wines, obviously, from, you know, furthest reaches from around the planet. But what I also find very amazing is I can look at Washington State, and it might as well be 3,000 miles away because I'm tasting very few Washington wines. But it's a wine country or wine city, shall we say, where I think people have an open mind. So once they taste, they're going to be asking for these wines.
So tonight you're drinking one that cost you $9.97 from the Republic of Georgia?
No, this is actually from the Republic of Macedonia.
Macedonia, wow.
Yeah.
That sounds like a trivia crack question.
It does. I was thinking the same thing.
let's play trivia crack real well. So do you travel to any of those areas? Or have you explored the tourist element of the wine?
Well, you know, in the past 2 years, I've been to Okanagan Valley, which is another place that is pretty remote in terms of at least being not known in California, but where, you know, I've had the opportunity to put foot on ground, and I'm going to Spain next month and Portugal. Those are very well-known wine countries, of course, but I've yet had the opportunity to put, you know, foot on ground in Republic of Macedonia, Croatia, you know, Republic of Georgia, and going to, you know, I'm thinking of, you know, there's wine countries that you can't visit right now. Say Syria or Lebanon would be a little more difficult to visit.
I would not want to visit Syria. I'm sorry. I would not be going with you, James, on a trip anywhere near that country.
I'll go to Lebanon with you.
My hope, and it's not a political discussion, is that somehow the wine craft survives whatever may happen, because I think wine is a great story, and it's a uniter of you know, it's something to have at the day, end of the day, shall we say, that you're going to share with family and friends, and that I think the traditions around the world should still survive. So part of it is, you know, I love every variety. I'm not going to throw one down in place of another. But I think it's really important to bring up regions and to really talk about varieties that are lesser known, regions that are lesser known. And, you know, definitely the goal is to travel to these places.
So you're like James the wine ambassador.
James the what?
James the wine ambassador.
There you go.
Absolutely.
Peace through wine.
Absolutely. You got to do it. You got to really, you know, I think that when you look at producers like maybe Casino Magro, Ayotico, or Malagosia, Malagosia is a great example. It's a wine variety that almost died out. And yet you have to, you know, come to the marketplace and talk about these wines and really being able to say why they should exist. What's their reason for being? And they're not just the reason I don't like the word esoteric is that it really implies something that is just only for a few knowledgeable people, but for no one else, as opposed to these are beautiful point of difference wines that should be saved and should be treasured.
Well, I'm surprised. Tina was on earlier, and she was saying – she's from San Diego, and she was saying that a lot of her favorite wines were from around the world too. And there you are in San Francisco, and you're saying the same thing. So it could be that your California wine atmosphere is more cosmopolitan.
Yeah, and you know what, though? I would say this. You know, I really think that we live in an interesting wine world where just a generation ago, 14 years ago – I would not have been able to find half the wines or even 75% of the wines that I'm tasting right here in San Francisco. So while, you know, years ago I'd have to travel to New York City to taste any of these wines, now I don't have to. They're here. And they're served on-premise, off-premise. And I think there's that great wine awakening. And, you know, I do think it's interesting that regions like, you know, Oregon are very hard to find in San Francisco, definitely Washington. But I think, you know, this wine culture and this desire for quality wines is really unfurling around the country. Like, I've been tasting wines from Idaho, Arizona, New Mexico, Virginia, of course. And I know you have Frank Morgan on later. And he does such a great job of promoting Virginia wines. And so I think it's all about keeping an open mind.
So, James, I do have a final question before we stop talking about wine. What do you do with all the wine? How many bottles do you open a week?
I probably open maybe about 12 to 15 bottles.
Uh-huh.
And really, you know, people don't believe that I just have half a glass or a glass a day that I consume in terms of not reviewing, but just to enjoy with my meal. And the other portions, I actually just, you know, I have what I call my wine studio or my wine fete, where I invite people over. I'm like, hey, let's have some cheese. Here's some great wine. And let's enjoy all this wine.
So you're great.
Be friends with
yeah, I was going
to
say that.
I'm moving to San Francisco.
Come on over. You're invited.
James, this has been a pleasure tonight.
Yes, I really appreciate the opportunity to be here. And, you know, you have some great guests, and I know each and every one of them. So thank you for having me today, and have a great evening.
Well, how can our listeners find you online?
I'm sorry?
How can our listeners find you online?
Oh, you know, I would say right now I'm trying to rebuild my website, but go to James, jamesawineguy@wordpress.com, and that's the bulk of my written material. And James and Wine Guy on YouTube, that's where 2013 of my videos live.
All right, excellent.
Nice. James, thanks so much for coming on.
Thank you. Have a good evening.
You too.
Right, take care.
Bye. Night.
I'm realizing these conversations are too short for my liking.
You know, right. I'm thinking the same. I think we have to have every guest back and just do a show around that one guest. James is amazing. I've been going back and looking through some of his videos on YouTube, and you get the passion. You get the sincerity, you get the intensity, and every wine he reviews is a wine I want to taste. Unfortunately, I don't live anywhere near San Francisco.
Well, usually when we interview a guest at about the 15-minute point, it's just when we're warming up. And then, you know, we sometimes go an hour and 45 minutes on some of these interviews, and then we have to cut them down. And I'm finding that this tonight is, I feel rushed. So we have to do it again and have them on for longer groups of time. I'm already learning a lot. It's expanding my, you know, it's expanding what I was thinking. I didn't realize they were going to be mentioning so many other areas from around the world. I was expecting them to be more regional.
I was too. This is a wonderful surprise.
And is now, what are you drinking?
I'm drinking a Walla Walla Syrah by Amaury Sellers, because she's one of my favorite winemakers in Washington State, and we interviewed her last year.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And that crop, that the vineyard that she uses and she gets most of her red from, is right next to the Leonetti Vineyard, which a lot of their wines, you know, scored 100 points. What's the one you're drinking tonight, having, as far as ratings and whatnot?
All right. So it's a 2008 Syrah Grenache. It was scored 92 points. This is not a current vintage, but I found it locally at a local wine shop. The current vintage is a 2011.
Okay.
So it's kind of fun that I actually found, you know, a regional wine locally that is not a current vintage that might be difficult for our listeners to find. But her current releases are also really gorgeous. She's super talented, and I just adore her Syrah and her Malbec.
Nice. Now, do you connect with all of our guests on Twitter? I mean, how do you guys usually?
Yeah, so everyone we're speaking with tonight, we engage weekly on Twitter.
Okay. So, and is that under the, which one? Is it under the wine studio that you're doing that?
Sometimes it's under hashtag wine studio. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's under hashtag wine chat. With Frank, more often it's hashtag VA wine chat.
Okay. And every week?
You know, it depends how engaged I am, but it can be. Or we're also friends on Facebook, so we interact on Facebook as well, well, more frequently, I think.
Okay, and then when you are interacting, do you have a wine open, the same wine at the same time?
Definitely with the VA Wine Chat, the Virginia Wine Chat, yes. With the wine studios, sometimes. If I'm slow at signing up, it'll be filled and there'll be no room. So then no wine. And then I have to go, well, I don't know if I want to interact if I don't get any wine too. But the big plus when we do the online Twitter virtual tastings is it is so much fun to taste the same wine at the same time with a group of people scattered around the U.S., most of whom I know, and then we get to talk about the wine, we get to interact with the winemaker, we get to ask questions, and you learn more of the backstory. And it's very educational, huge amount of fun. I mean, if you can participate in any of these Twitter wine tastings, strongly recommend it.
Well, I really like it when you have the winemaker there because they're the ones who, you know, it's their baby. And so I love to interview them too. They're just, that's where it seems like you can really learn a lot. But, you know, different every time.
Well, and it increases the bond or the brand awareness and I think the commitment or the connection to that brand. It does. It makes a big difference. And for me, that's how I remember, you know. So yeah. I think it's a win-win for the winery, the winemaker, the person hosting the show, and all the participants. And it also increases the circle of friends because if someone new pops on and you like what they're saying, you know, like them, friend them on Twitter, and add them to your list of wine friends.
Nice. Sounds like you guys have a lot of fun.
We do.
So your next friend on Twitter is Frank Morgan. Drink what you like. Tell me
drink what you like.
Tell me a little bit about Frank.
Frank is, in my mind, Frank is the Virginia wine blogger and Virginia wine promoter.
Okay.
And so for me, he epitomizes what I would like to be, for Washington State. He really is passionate about where he lives, which is in Virginia, and he was really passionate about Virginia wine and promoting the wine up and down the East Coast. And he does monthly Virginia wine tastings where they will be hosted at a winery, and then we get on to Twitter, and he's on a video presentation, and we get to see Frank, we get to see the winemaker, and we all taste the same wines at the same time.
Very cool. And his Drink What You Like, I like the title of that. I like.
Isn't that great? I wish I thought of that.
All of our guests are really passionate about what they do. Every one of them is really adding a lot to the conversation, be it video or, you know, the Twitter or blogging or whatever it may be. All of your friends in the wine world are really adding a lot. So.
They are. These are really special people, very talented, quite passionate, and they all have day jobs.
And they all have day jobs too. Amazing. Mm-hmm. You pretty much have to, don't you? I just got off work, and that's why, you know, I didn't have time to open my wine until just right when we sat down. And I'm drinking a local wine from, you know, it's Columbia Valley, but we're in Spokane, which is at the edge of Columbia Valley. So they do have to buy their grapes and bring them up to make them. But Townsend's one of our local ones here in Spokane, and I chose it as my favorite, not because it's my favorite, you know, ever wine. I love Leonetti and all kinds of others, but I chose it because it's the one I go to the most. You know, when I want to have a glass of wine at night, it's the one I go to. So I thought maybe that would qualify it as favorite. But the definition of favorite could be really a lot of different things.
It really is, and it's really tough to say this is my favorite when there are so many other tempting gems out there.
Exactly. I mean, if somebody was to ask you, I'm going to buy you a gift, and you tell me what your favorite wine is, because that's the one I'm going to get you. Now, that would be a different answer possibly for me. So, okay, let's go ahead. We're going to move along. We're going to play another song from The Turns. This one's called Don't Leave the Kids Alone. It kind of has a scary name. I'm not sure about this one. and we're going to be right back with Frank Morgan.
we're back.
Yes, and we are.
We're with our next guest, Frank Morgan of Drink What You Like. He is the Virginia wine blogger and wine host. Frank's also contributing editor for Virginia Wine Lover Magazine, Snooth.com, and he is the author of DrinkWhatYouLike.com. And those are his chronicles of wine travel experiences and stories, wines, wineries, and wine growers of Virginia. Welcome to the show, Frank.
Thanks, Linda, Bill. Thank you for having me. I will admit that I'm nervous, not so much about being on the show, but following James. I love his videos. I actually made a cameo appearance on one of his episodes, and my lack of video expertise really showed. He makes it look way, way, way too easy. So following James is making me a little bit nervous. So I apologize.
Oh, no, don't be nervous.
I was laughing as we were coming in because I can see Frank, because we're using Skype to connect tonight, and he can't see either of us, but I can see him. So I saw that. It's kind of fun.
So
maybe we should do this every time where they can't see us, but we can see them. It's like candid camera.
I'm a total Luddite. I barely can turn my computer on.
That's funny.
Well, you know, Frank, we asked a big question tonight. We have asked each of our guests to share their favorite wine. So what wine do you want to share with us tonight?
Well, I will tell you, to name a favorite wine is very difficult because for me, it's very experiential. And so my favorite wine may change every week. My wife and I, because like everybody, everyone's busy. My wife is a small business owner, has a number of employees that rely on her. And, you know, I travel a lot for my job in the aerospace industry. And everybody's busy. We have a 3.5-year-old at home. And so we have carved out Saturday nights when we're not traveling together to make that our home night, where we sit at home in sweats, and we sit in the kitchen with our daughter, and she sits on the island, and we put puzzles together. We cook, you know, an elaborate dinner, and we open several bottles of wine to try. And so every week, my favorite wine could be the one that I'm there experiencing with my wife that night, just vegging out, catching up from the busy week. But if pressed to name a favorite wine for this week, it would probably have to be the Pascal Janivert. It's a Chenin Blanc. It was a 2013. In fact, I just finished it. It's from the Yanieris region of the Loire Valley. I love the Loire. I'm going in April on a trip. And, I dig that wine. I dig the wines from, this particular producer. I love Chenin Blanc. It's so underrated. It's such a good value wine still coming out of the Loire. So that's probably my favorite wine, although we had a dinner last night with our some local wine friends, and I have left over about a glass and a half of 2001 Barbersville Octagon, which is pretty much the high water mark of Virginia wine. So I'm dodging your question because I don't have a favorite wine.
Okay. So I phrased it differently before we brought you on. For myself, if someone was to say, I'm going to buy you a gift, your favorite wine. Price is no limit. Better be honest. It's coming to your house. So no. That's a different way of saying it.
Any wine that begins with Domaine Romani Conti that is over 25 years old. Yeah. So I love Burgundy. I rarely ever drink really good Burgundy because I'm a working stiff. But yeah.
But that would be your favorite. So now you're up there in Virginia. Do people consider Virginia a wine? I mean, because I have William as my co-host, he talks about Virginia, and probably because he's listened to you and connected with you. But do you have a hard time convincing people about Virginia being wine country?
I do, but I will admit, Linda, I'm not in the business of convincing people about, you know, Virginia being a great region or Virginia being an emerging region. You know, I really believe Drink What You Like. I am a passionate advocate and promoter of the wines of the Commonwealth of Virginia because I love to enjoy them. I love drinking them. I know many of the winemakers here. I'm, you know, just ingrained in the wine culture in Virginia. So I don't really do a lot of convincing, but I do a lot of introducing. I have hosted a number of you know, Virginia wine tastings in California. And I've done, you know, in Colorado, like a Virginia versus Colorado tasting, even lugged a couple of bottles on my last trip to Australia to introduce some wine friends there in Melbourne to Virginia wine. So I don't convince, but I do a lot of introducing.
Okay. I must admit, it's really throwing me off to be able to see your video.
Mm-hmm. It's weird because I can't see you. I want to do something, pick my teeth or something. I don't know.
Well, I'm watching your movements, but usually it's just listening, and it's really easy for me to concentrate. I'm kind of used to that after all these years. But now I'm seeing you move around and talk, and it's throwing me off. What are we talking about? Where are you from? Okay, well, Frank, it's been wonderful talking to you and watching you on video tonight. They can connect with you at drinkwhatyoulike.com.
Yeah, right. Just drinkwhatyoulike.com, via Instagram, drinkwhatyoulike, on Twitter, drinkwhatyoulike, but with the letter U.
And also on hashtag VA Wine Chat.
Right. So, yeah, once a month I host a virtual tasting that brings together online wine influencers with notable Virginia winemakers, and that's called Virginia Wine Chat, or on Twitter, VA Wine Chat.
And well worth the time. I've had some wonderful Virginia wine experiences on VA Wine Chat.
And hopefully you have a lot more.
All right. Well, thank you.
Thank you, Frank.
I'm going to miss watching you there in the corner of my computer.
All right.
It's been fun.
Thanks. Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
That was funny. And that was fun. I really enjoy having somebody talking and where I can see them and they can't see me. It's great.
Maybe.
We'll... I was blowing my nose and doing all kinds of things over here, you know, and I was like, he can't see me, but I can see him. Ha ha. Ching. Okay. How's your wine opening up?
Actually, it's been open now. An hour and 15 minutes.
Okay.
And it's starting to show some a little more mature Syrah characteristics. A lot of fruit at opening, and now it's getting them a little earthier with the fruit.
Oh, nice. Mine was really tight. It's a 2003, the Reserve Townsend, and when I opened it, it was shy.
Oh, was it?
Yes, very shy. And now it's opening up in the glass. And I really wish I'd brought an aerator with me, but I'm in the studio and I'm away from home. If I was at home.
So an 03, still shy.
Oh, by the way, you know, I went to dinner with a family about 2 weeks ago, and I got the Walla Walla Vintners, which, by the way, may be my most favorite wine. I'm not sure. I mean, I love it. I hate to say favorite, too. I mean, you feel like you're cheating on some other wine by saying it's your favorite wine.
Right.
But I do love Walla Walla Vintners. Don't be mad at me, Townsend. It's sitting here staring at me. I'm going to turn its head, the label, the other direction so it doesn't hear me talking about another wine. Anyway, so we were at a restaurant, and we opened the Walla Walla Vintners Cab 2011.
Mm-hmm.
And they brought it to the table, and they had an aerator on the top of the bottle, and they decanted it. And so they they had a decanter, and it had an aerator on the top of the decanter, so they poured it through that. And I asked the food server, it's not waitress anymore, right? When I was working, it was a waitress, and then now, you know, it's food server. But I asked her if the wine steward had said that would be the appropriate thing to do with that particular bottle of wine, and she said, yeah, he tells us which ones to do that with and which ones not to. So have you ever seen that before?
I guess I don't go to the same kind of restaurants you do.
Aren't I special? No, this one wasn't that fancy or anything. It's just a nice little. It's in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho. You know, it's a beautiful location, and they have a good selection of wine. But that's the first time I had seen them do that, and I kind of have mixed feelings about decanting. So,
it was a good experience, right?
Yeah, you can't. You know, it's really good. It's interesting. I had the same bottle at home, and so last week I opened it up and didn't decant to see if it did need to be decanted. And, you know, it opened up in the glass pretty quick. So, I don't know, maybe the purpose was that to open it up before you left. You know, like, okay, I'm going to give you 45 minutes to stuff your face and get out of here. So we're going to speed this wine up.
Oh.
Come on, time's a ticking. All right, your time's up. Oh. Out of here. I know, I don't know. It could be, I mean, but seriously, to open up the wine while you're eating so that it doesn't open up an hour later when you're done eating.
Right.
I don't know.
Well, you know, when I take my tasting notes, I do it over time. So I do it at open and then usually 15-minute increments up to an hour. And then I'll do it every hour, usually up to 3 hours, sometimes 4 hours. And then I'll try to have some leftover for the next day. to give people a snapshot of how the wine progressed as it was exposed to air. And some wines are immediately presentable at opening. However, a lot of wines, they need a good 30, 45 minutes to an hour, sometimes 2 hours to start to show off.
And I should have told my food server that. I'm going to need 3-4 hours here.
If you're a restaurant, it's good to know that if you're serving a wine, does it need to be decanted, or can you open it, pour it, and people will be happy with it?
Yeah.
Or some people don't care.
That's true. Okay. We need to get April on. We'll ask her about decanting, too. We should have asked everybody. I should have asked everyone because that's been on my mind. But, again, we'll have to have them all on, and we should just do a thing where we have, like, 50 questions, and we ask them really fast and see how fast they can answer them.
Okay.
Okay. Again, the turns. This one doesn't have that scary title. This one's Everybody Knows It, though, which that could also be kind of scary. Everybody knows it.
I was the one to call it off this time. 'Cause I can't stand your cigarettes. Is it my fault that you lied to me? It's on your breath and it stains your teeth. Oh, everybody knows it. Oh, everybody knows it. Oh, everybody knows it.
And we're back with our last guest of the evening, April Yap Hennig.
Hi.
Hi, April. How are you?
Good, good.
Well, now I'm looking at your bio. It says here that you are a wine lover and marketer with 13 years of experience in international marketing, mm-hmm. communication in Europe and the United States. You hold a master's in viticulture and enology from the University of La Rioja, Spain, an MBA from Purdue University, a BA from University of Utah. You're a certified wine sommelier from the International Wine Guild, and you're forging a new future in Oregon as director of marketing and hospitality, as well as a wine and travel writer for sacreddrop.com.
Yeah, a lot.
And you lived in a lot of places around the world, too.
I have. I grew up in the Dominican Republic and then went to high school in Ecuador, and then I moved back to Utah, where I was born originally. And then decided that I needed to leave. And so Utah, and being someone that likes wine, that's probably not the best place to be. Mm. So I moved to Spain and did a study abroad there, fell in love with the country, and I had kind of promised myself that I would eventually come back and work in wine. And, you know, life takes you down a lot of different roads. And then finally I was like, you know what? I'm going to go back to Spain. And so back in 2010, I moved to Spain and decided to do a master's of viticulture and enology there, and I loved it. And I've always loved the region, and it's, to date, is probably still my favorite region, even after living in Oregon now for a while. And I love Pinot Noir, but I'm still a huge Tempranillo and Garnacha fan. So, yep.
Well,
what a great place to live, though, to experience wine. Spain.
Oh, it is. Amazing.
Linda and I are both curious about which wine you selected to share with us tonight as your favorite wine.
My favorite wine. You know, just like everyone else was mentioning before, it's really hard to pick a favorite wine. When I saw that question, I was like, oh dear, that's going to be a hard one. But one of my favorites to date is the 2001 Rioja Alta Gran Reserva. And the reason why it's so spectacular is because that is an excellent vintage for the Rioja region. And Rioja Alta is one of the oldest, most established wineries in the region. And they just, quality-wise, they're always popping out high-quality wines with a lot of flavor, with just a lot of elegance. And honestly, whenever I open that 01, which is actually really, really hard to find, mm-hmm. If I can find it, I'm just ecstatic and over the moon. So that's my special wine. And then I do have a go-to wine, that, you know, if I'm looking for a Rioja that I want to pick up in the store, and a wine that you can probably easily find, there's a 2008, Marques de Riscal Rioja. Uh-huh.
And that's like an $18 bottle of wine. And it's a it's a reserve wine, it's a Reserva wine, and it shows beautifully. It's kind of got like this, you know, dark baked cherries with like leather, cigar, and a little bit of cacao. It's really nice. So that's
sounds
the other option.
Wonderful. Anything. Mm-hmm. I love cigars, and I'm a horsewoman. I love leather. Everything you're mentioning. Yum, yum. I would love to eat my saddle. No, just kidding.
I know a lot of people are like, how is that appetizing? And I was like, it just is.
It is.
Sounds appetizing to me. Yeah. So what do you do at Sacred Drop?
So Sacred Drop, I do a lot of just blogging. I like to write about wines that I'm drinking. I like to just kind of write about life and how my interactions with wine have been. I've also in the past done a lot of interviews. I actually, James, the wine guy, was one of the first people that got me into doing videos. And I met James in Rioja, of all places. And that was our first interaction together. And he convinced me to do videos. And so I started doing video interviews and whatnot. And it's been a little bit since I've done it. I'm one of those people that started doing it and kind of dropped off a little bit, but I'm planning on getting back into it.
Yeah. So it's a small wine world if you see him in Rioja.
It is. It's a really small wine world. So we all get a chance to see each other every year, you know. So that's a lot of fun at the Wine Bloggers Conference. It can get a little crazy. It can be a lot of fun, though.
Oh, I'm sure it can. I like the laugh at the end there. A lot of fun. Yeah.
Well, I'm not the only one that did that little laugh. I think William can speak to that as well.
That's right. Okay, so I had a question about, before you guys say too much about the Wine Bloggers Conference, I'll stop you. And I'm going to ask you about decanting.
Yes.
What are your thoughts on that when a restaurant decants a bottle without asking you? Is that a crime?
The Somme obviously knows that wine probably needs to be decanted, but I would prefer that they ask me. Because you can always smell the wine and when they put a little bit in your glass and you can say, you know what, this is a little closed and I'd like it to open up a little bit more. Do you mind decanting it? Sometimes you want it to naturally decant on its own, throughout the meal, just so you kind of know how it's evolving. But you know, I prefer if someone asks me.
Mm, me too.
I agree.
I felt a little surprised there. When they were decanting the wine I ordered before.
You're like, wait.
What are you doing? Stop. Did somebody say that's okay?
And sometimes older wines shouldn't be decanted. I think William can speak to this as well. I think that sometimes they're just too delicate. And the last thing you want is them to be overexposed to air. So, yeah, you need to be a little careful with that. Mm. But
I'm in agreement.
So I would drink half the bottle that was decanted and then complain and demand my money back and then see if I got a free bottle of wine.
Yeah, especially I'm all when it's over like that one, William. That's what I love to do. I also return everything I buy to stores.
Wait a minute. I never asked for that to be decanted. You expect me to pay for that?
That's hilarious.
And a whole meal free, too. Yeah, the whole thing. Yeah.
It just didn't pair well.
Yeah.
So, April, we asked this to Tina when she was on. What do you think is an under-known but up-and-coming varietal? Did I ask that right? I'm drinking wine now, so I can't be expected. I speak like a dyslexic sometimes. If you understood that question, answer it.
Yes, I understood the question. An up-and-coming varietal. That's a really hard question. I can speak to an up-and-coming region.
Okay, good. Go for it.
You know, there's Ribera del Duero is a region that's right next to Rioja, which is definitely up and coming. But another area that's really up and coming is Bierzo. I don't know if you've heard of Bierzo, but it's in the same area, very close to Rioja and Ribera del Duero. And it's kind of sandwiched between, and I have to look at a map to remember off the top of my head, but my understanding is it's kind of sandwiched. It's below Ribera del Duero, and it's like under Rioja and over a little bit to the left of Madrid. So if you're familiar with it, and it's in Spain. But they're able to grow a lot of beautiful, you know, grapes there. And it's a really interesting area, and it's also really well-priced. And so if somebody wants to try a different region other than the traditional Rioja or Priorat, for example, regions, then I would recommend trying Bierzo.
So. I am going to be looking for Norwegian wines because I'm going to Norway in, I think, August. We haven't bought our tickets yet, but we are going to Norway because we have kids that are over there and working.
Oh, wow.
So I don't know any Norwegian wines. I'm like, what?
Isn't it too cold?
I don't think so. Lots of ice wine. But yeah. I'll have to look into that a little bit later. But Spain, it's a much more of a wine country, Italy, France, and you were in the heart of it, so you would know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's too bad being, I mean, now that I'm in Oregon, it's just so far away, but I get my little taste of home every time I open up a bottle.
Well, since you've been in Oregon, have you got into any of the Pinots?
I have. I work right now for 3 wineries here in Oregon, and I've had a chance to try a lot of great, great wines. Is there one that's necessarily a favorite? That's really hard because I really like bigger bodied wines, but I can enjoy a Pinot, and I love Pinot with salmon, for example. I love it. And pork, it's perfect pairing. So I can't name a favorite.
It has its place. It has its place. Mm-hmm. But we were talking recently, and Oregon is the go-to place for Pinots. Up here, not so much in Washington. But
yeah,
you're in the heart of Pinot country.
Yeah, well, you guys have some phenomenal reds. So
yes,
yeah,
April
and I did that.
We made them.
Yeah, April and I were on a harvest tour in October in Prosser Wine Country.
Yep,
and that was a lot of fun.
It was a lot of fun. It was a blast. I didn't realize that Prosser had so many great wines. So,
well, and I'm next door to Prosser, and to be honest, I learned a lot.
Go to Spain. Go to Prosser.
That's right.
Take your pick.
Take your pick.
I'm just kidding. We can laugh because it's our family. You know, it's our, you know, like family can make jokes about each other, but you can't make any jokes about Prosser, April. Just
understood.
All right, April. So they can find you at sacreddrop.com. Is that correct?
They can.
And you're on Twitter. I saw you on Twitter.
Mm-hmm. And I'm on Instagram and on Facebook, so you can pretty much find me everywhere.
Okay. All right. Well, we hope
thank
to come
you,
back
April.
On the show
thank
with all
you.
Of our other guests, too. We'll do a longer conversation, and then we'll do the 50 questions. Okay, April?
Sounds good.
All right.
Thank you.
Good night.
Thanks
Cheers.
For having me.
Good night, April.
Bye.
Very nice.
All right.
Well, yeah. I kind of miss not having Frank on there anymore to, you know, stare at moving around in his room. Which room were you in, Frank? Was that like your attic room or an office? Or it had kind of a pointy ceiling.
I have tape over my video camera, just in case.
What are you, in the buff or in your jammies? Or?
No, I just don't want anyone spying on me. So, or I don't want to accidentally be on video while I'm talking to someone. So. It's just taped over. One less thing to think about.
Mine's not taped over, but okay. So the wine that I have, being a 2003, that was interesting what April said about not decanting older wines. And this one would be considered an older wine.
Well, and she may be talking about a wine that's, say, 20, 30, 40, 50 years old. I was just reading a review about a French wine that was a 1962 vintage, and something like that. They're very delicate, and you don't want to overexpose them to air. And if you decant it, it's just shoving air up and down, and the wine will break down, and it'll lose a lot of the flavor that's still there.
Awesome.
So you want to do a gentle pour.
A gentle pour, and let it open up in the glass.
Right, and you know, smell it, taste it, enjoy it, appreciate it, whatever is there. And sometimes there's a lot of flavor in there in that wine. And the last thing you want to do is to strip away what's there by decanting it.
Right, right. How's your wine doing?
Let's see.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Sound effects here. Oh yeah, you got to do the swishing.
Mm. Wow, that's really nice. I'm at an hour and 17 minutes, and it's really. I'm getting a lot more violets, a little more fruit going on. It's really a polished, smooth wine. The tannins are minimal, and the acid that was there has disappeared. It's just a lot of really great. This is a really drinking wine. This is I wouldn't have food with this wine right now. Just enjoy it. It's actually beautiful. I think over the next hour or two, it's going to show off even more. It's lovely.
And you said that was the Grenache?
It's Amaury Cellars 2008 Syrah Grenache. So it's 88% Syrah and 12% Grenache. Technically, they don't. Technically, they wouldn't have to put Grenache on there because it's over, 75% of one varietal or one variety. So it's mostly Syrah, 88% Syrah. So she could have called it a Syrah, but this one's not labeled that way.
Nice.
And it is showing very, very well. As I said, I'm a fan, so it's a nice wine.
No, absolutely. You're a big fan. What are we doing next month? What's next month's show?
Well, so next month I was hoping we could do something a little different. And I actually would like to see if we could sit down and talk to a company that makes yeast for fermentation. You know,
Ooh, that's exciting.
It is really, I mean,
I'm just kidding.
To make wine, you need yeast. You need to ferment the sugars in the grape juice to convert sugar to alcohol. Mm-hmm. And that's what yeast does. And it seems, only natural for us to have a discussion with a company that manufactures the yeast and to talk to them about yeast. I've never had a yeast conversation with anyone as far as who makes it or, how they make it, how they, identify the different strains. I mean, to me, it sounds like a very interesting subject to talk about with someone. So that's my idea.
No, I like it. And I think that's what we're going to do. I haven't committed 100% yet. And then we do want to talk about barrels at some point because we had Michael Richmond on, and he's the winemaker down at Bouchain in the Carneros Valley. And
barrels, a cooperage. I would love to talk to a
cooperage. Yes.
Last night I was actually at a sensory class at Fidelitas Winery in Red Mountain.
I saw pictures of that on your Twitter.
Yep. We had an enologist who was there, and she actually, after we did the sensory smelling of the trying to identify different aromas in the wines, she spent a fair amount of time talking about oak and barrel programs and how where the oak comes from is really important, and not just say French oak, but which part of France and how long the barrels the oak was stored outside, and then what treatment did it receive, and was it toasted or not toasted, and there's a lot there. And also a lot of the aromas and flavors can come from oak. And depending on who made it, when they made it, where they made it, where it's from, that oak will impart different characteristics to the wine. It's a big subject.
It is big and it is fascinating. And you're all going to want to come in and listen to that. And our yeast, you're going to want to hear all about the yeast.
Well, I want to hear about the yeast. I'm really curious about
the
yeast.
I do too. I'm just kidding, of course. Maybe we can do those together next month. That would be fun. But this will be interesting. I do want to have Tina back on. Tina Murray from Protocol Wine Studio was on today. That's hashtag Wine Studio. Then we had James the Wine Guy Melendez, Peace Through Wine, and the Wine Ambassador. He's been dubbed by William tonight. And you can watch all of his videos, 2,000 of them. That's amazing. 2,000. I thought that was a typo. But
No. Seriously, he has done an amazing job, and I was actually on there just the other night, this weekend, going through a bunch of his videos and looking at his a perspective on wine. It's fascinating, absolutely fascinating.
And then we had Frank Morgan, Drink What You Like. You gotta love that. Who we got to also watch on video, and April Yap Hennig, Sacred Drop. So I would love to have them all on again to talk a little bit more about their areas, because I was surprised at them and their pretty broad interests. All of them did mention, even I think all of them, in Virginia, Oregon, San Francisco, San Diego, they were still talking about wines from around the world
where
they joined us today. So they obviously have their palates expanded beyond mine. I'm still working through Washington.
And they're super passionate, super smart, very well educated. They take wine, they understand it, it's a food and it's something you enjoy with friends and with family and at meals, but they take it further.
Yeah. And I like what James had to say about wine possibly being, a doorway to some kind of peace. And especially, I hadn't thought of Syria as a wine country. And he brought that up. And it's true. These wine regions, no telling what they're going to look like after they're war ravished. But the kind of people who make wine are probably the kind of people who would also be good allies, you know, good people, you'd think.
Yeah, I that resonated with me as well. I have a soft spot for El Masaya, which is a Lebanese winery, and they actually had to leave the country during the about 20 years ago, and they've all come back, and they're making wine. Now things are getting unstable again. But they make whites and reds and rosés. They make arak. And the wines are made by, they're Lebanese Christians that live in a predominantly Muslim area in a very caustic part of the world. And if James wants to go to Lebanon, we need to see how we can set that up, because I would love to go to Lebanon and go into the Bekaa Valley and look at where those grapes are grown and try the wines and experience that location, possibly with body armor. But it would be a wonderful experience. And I think that message, you know, James really did touch into that message of what I interpreted loosely as, peace through wine. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a message that certainly is going to stick with me for a while.
Mm, absolutely. Well, I allocated 90 minutes for the show just to make sure we had enough time tonight. But the show's usually an hour, and I just did that in case we went over. So we are going to wrap it up. And this is every third Thursday of the month. You can join us. We do also appreciate your calls, 424-222-5339. And you can call in and tell us whatever you're drinking. Tonight we've been pretty packed and moving along, but in the future, you know, feel free to call and ask questions and share your thoughts about wine and winemaking. Everybody's welcome. This is an open forum, and we love, 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 love to talk to people about wine. So next month, third Thursday.
That's right.
William, you have a nice time. Enjoy the rest of your bottle.
I'm going to, and I'll take some notes to share with people, too. I'll post something to the blog at some point.
Please do, and can you also include all the wines that were mentioned tonight?
Well, I'll tell you what I'll do. I will do my best. They were all over the place, but I have bios and links to all of our guests, and so I will definitely have those on the post to my blog. And then links to those websites, and so they can contact people via Twitter or via email.
Okay, nice. William, cheers.
Cheers, Linda.
Thank you for joining us tonight on The Wine News. You can hear more of our shows at minstrelandmuse.com, and you can find us at William Pollard's blog at wildforwashingtonwine.com. Please join us again every third Thursday of the month, live here on BTR, for another new show.